This podcast is brought to you by lineupmedia.fm.
Today's show is presented by DaVinci Smart Drink. Order yours now at lineupmedia.fm/DaVinci. DaVinci, excite better thinking.
You need a mental boost? DaVinci Smart Drinks were designed with professional thinkers in mind. With key ingredients shown to improve cognitive function and increase mental energy, DaVinci Smart Drinks excite better thinking. Drink a DaVinci. Let it go to your head.
You're listening to This Day in History, a podcast dedicated to examining history from a standpoint of determining which event on any given day had the greatest impact on our lives. Now your host, Tony Hubert and Armand Kachigian.
Welcome to the winter solstice here on lineupmedia.fm. Tony Hubert, Armand Kachigian, as we bring you This Day in History for December the 21st. Armand, happy solsticing.
Yes, let's dispel a few things right now for our less scientifically oriented listeners. It's winter, first day of winter. It has nothing to do, by the way, with, you know, how close or far the sun is from the Earth is from the sun.
Yes.
Actually, we are approaching our perigee. Our parasolstice.
What is that?
Well, that means our closest approach to the sun comes, I think, on January 6th, which is why in the southern hemisphere, the winters are about 7% colder and the summers are about 7% warmer.
Oh, I did not. That is a great factoid. Earth, I did not know that.
Right. The Earth is closer now.
Yes.
Right. So it makes it a little bit warmer
mm-hmm.
in the southern hemisphere. In summer, when we're farthest, theoretically, apogee or whatever that would be,
mm-hmm.
our apogee from the sun, it's a little bit, it cools us off a little bit.
Just a little bit.
Just 7%.
That's a lot,
so
though.
I think, yeah, July 7th is when we're the furthest from the sun.
How come we don't have that on those days, then?
We don't have what?
The solstice.
Well, that has nothing to do with it.
Ah.
The solstice is when the sun is directly overhead.
Okay.
The sun is directly overhead the tropic of Capricorn.
Capricorn.
Yes, Capricorn.
Right? Today.
Southern hemisphere, right.
Yes,
today.
The southern one.
Now.
At the
southern, 23 and a half degrees.
On June 21st.
Yeah, because the seasons are due to tilt of the Earth.
The sun is directly over.
On what day? Today?
June 21st.
Oh, June 21st.
It's over the Tropic of Cancer.
Correct.
Then on the equinox,
yeah,
the autumnal, and I always forget the name for the spring equinox. I just call it spring equinox, but there's a real name for that. What is it? Oh, I stumped him, folks. This is a red letter day.
And
we got the eternal? Eternal? No?
I'll think of it.
Yeah.
Just give me a moment.
All right. That means directly over the pole.
Over the equator.
Equator.
Right. Mm-hmm. That's right. So that's where, and it describes.
So if you were a druid, what would you be doing today?
I'd be doing a fertility rite.
Attaboy.
Attaboy. Damn right.
All right.
Underneath an oak tree.
On this show, we always bring out what happened on this date in history. We debate which of the events that occurred are the biggest in terms of how they affect the world you live in today.
Vernal.
Okay. I said ethernal.
Just give me a moment.
Yeah,
it
vernal.
Always comes. All right.
I like the equinox
spring
better.
Spring is the vernal equinox.
Better than the solstice.
And there's no, and that's a myth that you can balance an egg on the equinox.
Yeah.
You can try it.
Well.
Oh, and something else interesting, though. Tonight, for the first time in like 500 years, there's also going to be a lunar eclipse. So this is like the darkest
on the
and
21st.
Longest night. Yeah. It very rarely do you have a lunar eclipse on an equinox. It's been like 500 years. So
Holy smoke.
In the wee hours, yeah, you get the darkest and longest night
of
the year.
Do we have a projected time for over the United States?
I think it's like 2 to 3 in the morning.
2 to 3?
Our time.
Okay.
Or is that Eastern? Whatever.
No, that's it's in the range. I might actually.
Yeah.
Because I.
Very rare event.
For the way my bed is positioned by the window,
yeah,
I get a pretty good view of the moon most nights.
Oh. Okay.
For a bit.
You have your head away from the door? Is that feng shui?
Yes. Yeah. Head is away from the door.
Put a little fountain in there, too. Run some water.
I use the laptop with the Babbling Brook sound.
Oh, do you? Okay.
Yeah, it works just as well. Nothing gets wet, which is nice.
Yeah, I just wet my pants.
Well, you are you are of that
nocturnal age. Nocturnal emissions.
So right. We have a couple things that affect the world we live in today that
so.
We will debate. Pretty cool. I like this day in history today. I do. This is there's some sad ones as well. And, of course, we do who was born and who exited stage left. Is it stage left or stage right?
I don't know what Snaggletooth. Wasn't that Snaggletooth
right.
to do that?
Yeah. Who exited from the world of history on this day. So we begin. Let's go back to the year 69, Common Era. Vespasian, the Emperor of Rome. Well, he's officially declared emperor today.
We talked about him yesterday and at length.
Yeah, and we're not going to go over
pay
it again.
Toilets and debase the currency.
Again, I'm all for the pay toilet.
Yeah.
I'm fine with that. But it ended the last in the year of the four emperors.
Yeah.
On this date in 1620, William Bradford.
All right.
We've
also gone over this. A bunch of socialists.
Yeah. He lands on what is now known as Plymouth Rock in Plymouth, Massachusetts.
Just goes to show you that if you want your people to die and they steal each other's food and nobody works, establish one of these utopian societies, which is what they tried to do.
I say establish them because you'll find out right away who's not worth a damn.
Nobody is.
And then you can call them right out.
There's no incentive to work for profit. You're not going to work. That's what it said.
Yeah.
Why would a strong, able-bodied man go to work in the fields, put all the fruits of his labor?
He's really, really hungry.
Yeah, well, they put it into a – so is everybody else. That's the problem. They put it in this communal whatever they – And people are just stealing.
I agree. Doesn't work.
These people, so everybody stopped producing.
1784, John Jay. Now, we've talked about him as Chief Justice, but on this date, the 21st of December, in that year, he becomes the first Secretary of State.
Not right.
For the United
States. Not exactly.
States.
He was the first Secretary of Foreign Affairs. So
well,
that's why
actually it does say parentheses, Foreign Affairs.
So technically, Jefferson was the first Secretary of State.
I like that,
if
John.
You're at a trivia contest.
I don't want to overlook John Jay.
Well, then read the Federalist Papers.
Well,
I
have.
About four or five.
I got them when I was in high school, and they're hard. It wasn't an easy read. On this date in 1861, here's something that Lincoln did that I think you're going to like. He signed into law the public resolution, Resolution Number 82, and it contained this provision. It contained a provision that the Navy can award a Medal of Valor.
Right. Okay.
Way to go, Abe.
Which evolved into the Medal of Honor.
Now, one of the ones that might be debatable that we may come back to occurred on 1864.
Well, wait a minute. A couple things about the Medal of Honor.
Oh, you got some Medal of Honor.
It's not the Congressional Medal.
No, first of all, this is Medal of Honor. This is Naval Medal of Valor.
Yes, but that's what it evolved into.
It evolved into.
Medal of Honor in the name of Congress. So that's what it should be called. There have been, to this date, 3,515 awarded. We talked about Tom Custer, who died.
Yes.
He won two. How do you like that? Yeah.
Wow.
There have only been like 19 have won two. MacArthur is the oldest to win. Teddy Roosevelt is the only president to win one, but that was kind of tainted because he won it for San Juan Hill, which was really Kettle Hill. But anyway, they gave it to him in 2001.
It was apocryphal anyway, wasn't
it? He was actually very heroic.
No, I know he was there.
They didn't
ride
up it, by the way. They walked.
But that's what I mean.
Yeah,
the charge up the hill,
it
didn't happen
well, it was
that way.
On foot, yeah.
Right.
So that's the other thing. The first winner was Jacob Parrott. I thought that was interesting.
Jacob Parrott.
Yeah, P-A-R-R-O-T-T.
Okay.
Private.
Private.
So there you go.
Very
first
good.
Winner. And, of course, there's one for the Army, Navy, and the Air Force. They each have their separate ones. The Navy, I think, like the Merchant Marine and the Marines, also, they're Navy. They get the Navy.
They get the Naval.
And it's our only award that has the ribbon, of course. You wear it around your neck.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, it does not go on your your
breastplate. It's not
salad.
Yeah. Okay, there you go.
Now, very good. Okay, 1864. Again, this might have a bigger effect on our history and the world we live in today than I think a lot of people may think at first. But on this date, Sherman, he gets to the sea. He conquers Savannah, Georgia.
Yeah, and he wasn't done yet. And then he turned north. Again, useless, waste, complete destruction for nothing.
Yeah, I'm going to come back to that one because I think there was a tone set
Another
by Sherman that
Lincoln's
that,
cap.
That maybe America is not healed up from yet. 1891, this is another big one. We'll revisit this, but a little game was played in Springfield, Massachusetts. 1898, on this date, French scientist Pierre and Marie Curie discover radium.
We've discussed this.
That's big.
When we talked about Henri Becquerel, remember he also shared in the Nobel Prize for this radioactivity.
1910,
which eventually killed him too. Pierre, real quick.
An underground explosion at the Houlton Bank Colliery, number 3 pit in Overhulton, West Houlton, England, kills 344 miners.
Yeah, those happen, boy.
The pains that labor went through to get some type of safety.
How are you going to stop this?
You're not. These events. Yeah, I'm not casting aspersion here, but my Lord, did the miners suffer? It's mind numbing that 344 in one work day just gone. On this date in 1913, this is just for you, Armand.
That's right. I'm pretty good at these.
Arthur Wynne. He has something that is published in the New York World. I want to say the World was a Hearst publication.
Ooh, I don't know about that. I'll look it up.
Or was it a Pulitzer? I think it was a Hearst. But the first crossword puzzle is published as a word cross.
Yeah.
My father was a devotee of the New York Times crossword.
Could he do the tough? It gets tougher during the week.
So it progresses Monday.
Yeah, Monday's easiest.
Monday and it progressively
Friday and
harder.
Saturday are very hard.
So Friday, Saturday,
Sunday
are very hard. And did you do the one in the Times or in the Times Magazine for Sunday?
I don't know. I do the one that they give it to all the papers because the St. Louis Post-Dispatch.
They outsource it.
The only reason anybody ever get that paper would be.
Oh, come now, come now.
Socialist rag.
Oh gosh. he did. He was able to crack a few of the big Sundays.
Okay.
But not without a bit of trial and error. I will tell you though, who was exceptional, was my mother's mom, my grandmother Mildred. Was dynamite at the New York Times crossword. When you know, I could do facts and things, you know, like what are the facts that I can answer that I know are correct that you can slot in.
Yeah,
okay,
but there's very few of those.
There aren't. Yeah. She would be able to get all those real crosswordy type clues. She'd just knock them out. I mean, she'd go, oh, that's EMI.
Right.
What does that mean?
Well, you have to know those.
And
yeah,
she knew them all.
Obi, you know, Japanese sash.
Armand, she was knocking these down when she was 96, 97.
Good for her.
She really, I would be like, I'm stuck. And she'd come over and.
She probably passes the smell.
She did them
test.
In pen.
Yeah, that's the true
the
mark.
True mark. Of a, I didn't dare.
Yeah, a dilettante uses a pencil.
Yes. Well, that's me. 1919, and I just like this because I love the word anarchist.
Okay.
American anarchist Emma Goldman is deported to Russia.
On the Red Ark, the Buford. Yeah, and here again. And why was she deported? Well, because of these arbitrary laws they came up with. Emma's an interesting gal. I wrote a few things down about her. Her lover and friend and sometimes lover, Alex Berkman, eventually shot himself. She wasn't around for that. His other lover was there. They tried to assassinate Henry Clay Frick, a businessman. I don't know why they picked him in 1892, threw them in jail for that. She was really big on birth control. Her magazine that she edited was Mother Earth, an anarchist journal. Big-time women's suffragette, arrested for inciting Czolgosz to kill McKinley, apparently. He listened to one of her, one of these Stemwinder speeches of hers, and that apparently is what gave him the impetus to shoot President McKinley. As I said, she was deported in the Buford. It's called the Red Ark. They sent her and all of her red buddies away on that thing. They got to Russia, and she was a little disillusioned with Russia. In fact, she wrote a book, My Disillusionment with Russia.
Aptly named.
And she was so disillusioned, she wrote My Further Disillusion with Russia. Yeah, she was very disillusioned with Russia.
That's a ton of disillusionment.
Two books, yeah. The biggie was the Kronstadt Rebellion, which she thought was great, you know. And then our friends at the Cheka took care of those guys.
Yeah.
Knocked out a few thousand of them.
Unmercifully.
Yeah, that's why she was disillusioned and she left. And then she traveled around.
Russia always seems like a good idea until you get there.
Yeah, right. Exactly. It's a great idea.
Ask Lee Harvey.
Don't spend any time there.
And the interesting thing is, a woman did win the Academy Award for playing Emma Goldman.
Oh.
If you can name it.
No, I cannot.
Okay. Maureen Stapleton.
Maureen Stapleton?
Maureen Stapleton in the film Reds won the Academy
1981.
Award.
Yes. Warren Beatty, Diane Keaton.
He won Best Director.
Yes, I've not watched
Emma Goldman.
I've not watched that film a ton, but I have seen it. It's probably been years since I've seen it.
Now I've screwed this up because I should know this, but here's the interesting thing about that. I think she was the last of the four in a row to win Best Supporting Actress with the same initials, MS. Did you know that?
Maureen Stapleton. So okay. In 81,
that's
she 81. Wins
it. Now going back to 80.
Meryl Streep.
And that was
Kramer versus Kramer, 79.
That was
1980, Ordinary People was the Best Picture.
1980. We're on 1980, yeah. Now I'm forgetting.
1982.
Oh. No, it was 78 through 78 through 81. I'll give them to you. 78 was Maggie Smith.
For what?
Executive Suite or something.
Yeah, Executive Suite.
79, we just said, was Meryl
Streep.
Kramer
versus Kramer, Meryl Streep.
80 was Mary Steenburgen for Howard and...
Howard and June?
No, it was somebody. It was about Howard Hughes. It wasn't June, was it? Melvin and Howard.
Melvin and Howard.
81.
Boy, Mary Steenburgen, still Emma good Goldman. Looking today. My goodness.
Emma Goldman. There you go. I mean, we just said... Maureen Stapleton. So that's interesting. Four in a row, MS.
No, that's a great fact. That's, again, hell of a trivia question. You ever get that one?
Yep.
1936 on this date, the JU-88 multi-role combat aircraft takes its first flight.
Not a great plane, but very, very utilitarian.
A ubiquitous plane during the early part of World War II.
The 87 was obviously the Stuka. That was the one that's infamous.
On this date in 1937, a film premieres that we'll come back to, I believe.
Yeah, I think we'll have something
and
to say about
that. 1946, an 8.1 earthquake and a subsequent tsunami hits Japan in Nankaido, kills over 1,300 people, destroys over 3,800 homes. You just came off of 1945 and two atomic bombs. The next year,
there were 38,000 homes left after we got done. But by the way, we did make a mistake, or I did.
We did.
Last week we were talking about Nagano.
Yes,
that is on the island of Honshu.
Oh, it is on the main
island. It's not on the island of Hokkaido.
In 1967, Louis Wishkonsky.
Oh yeah, I know this guy.
Yeah, you do. You mentioned it before.
I didn't even need to read this.
The first man who gets a heart transplant.
I asked you how long
he
lived.
He survived for 18 days. He passed away.
Yeah, he kicked off today.
In Cape Town, South Africa. 1968, on December 21st, Apollo 8 launched, and this becomes the first vehicle and crew on a lunar trajectory for the first visit to another celestial body by human beings.
Anders, Borman, and Lovell. The three.
Uncelebrated.
Three men, first to see Earth rise, to see the dark side of the moon.
But they were they're the first human eyes to
see the. We'd seen the dark side because we'd sent probes with photographs.
But first human eyes on the dark side.
Yeah.
This date in 1988, a tragedy, a bomb explodes on Pan Am Flight 103 over Lockerbie, Dumfries, Scotland.
That was Gaddafi, right?
And it was attributed eventually to.
Yeah, and that's what led to.
But I remember the school, there was a returning school trip from, I believe, Mechanicsburg, Virginia or Maryland, and basically the entire class is just absolutely tragic. And I think this one struck a chord with Americans because of the kids on the plane. There had been suicide bombings earlier, and there had certainly been hijackings. But this was one of the first.
A suicide bomb? Was the guy that
planted
it?
No, because the guy's not on the plane.
Planted on
it was
the plane,
a planted bomb.
Yeah.
You know, there had been terrorist activity certainly earlier from a plane being hijacked to suicide bombers. But this one I always felt struck a real chord and set a real tone about the fear of terrorism.
The perpetrators.
1995, Bethlehem, not Pennsylvania. Bethlehem, Israel, passes to Palestinian control. And in 2004, in the Iraq War, a suicide bomber at a forward operating base in Mosul, Iraq,
in the single deadliest suicide attack on American soldiers kills 22 Americans. I do as well. There was another, and it didn't occur on this date, but there was another attack like that in Afghanistan where the where the expected person coming to the base to meet with officers and intel people got to the gates and did the same thing. Did the same.
A crafty boy.
All right. So the events that affect our lives the most. I want to go back to 1864. I do think the fact, and you've mentioned this, Sherman and the March to the Sea. On this date, he reaches Savannah, conquers Savannah. This is a hypothetical question, Armand. But had Sherman just cut the supply lines and not waged this blitzkrieg, total warfare, annihilation of everything, would the sentiment of the South have changed, and would have Reconstruction possibly gone better? It's a hypothetical, but I do think this, if I do think this one left a lasting bad taste in the mouth of U.S. residents in the southern states.
Well, it was rather gratuitous destruction.
It's destruction for destruction's sake,
I guess.
It's a bit like Dresden and firebombing.
Lesson. Yeah, that's what he, I guess that's what he was doing. I don't know what Sherman was up to, but it did give an abject lesson in the folly of seceding from the Union, and you know how I feel about that. But I don't know. That whole war, in my opinion, was a complete waste.
Well, I know your opinion on the war.
610,000 people, but soldiers, not to mention civilians.
Right.
For what? Nothing. So, in my opinion.
So go back to Sherman.
No, I don't think it would have made any difference at all.
No? You think it would have been
– No.
You think we would still have – that degree of rancor between the South and the North to this date, if we could eliminate just a couple of events.
Diminish the acrimony at all.
The acrimony would still be there.
Yes, I think. Just because, you know, Reconstruction in and of itself was
Pretty
rough there. So
it was rough. But if I can also take away the assassination of Lincoln, who was going to be very sympathetic to the South during Reconstruction, and if I can take away Sherman's destruction,
and if you can take away,
do we have a much more unified country?
Then you probably get rid of the Ku Klux Klan, because that was the whole bargain, that, you know, they would elect Hayes if they got the hell out of the South, and that's what led to the rise of the Ku Klux Klan, and that wasn't good. So we'll go over that
when that comes up on this day in history.
Someday. Yeah.
All right. The next one I wanted to explore, and this is cultural. But rarely is something invented, and it just catches on.
Okay.
But Dr. James Naismith, on this date, 1891, he invents the game of basketball, and the first game, based on the rules created by Dr. Naismith, is played by 18 students in Springfield, Massachusetts.
Yeah, well, it didn't catch on with me.
You don't like basketball.
I prefer wrestling.
Okay, that's fine, but wrestling had been around for thousands
that's
of
correct.
Years.
And there's a reason for that.
Yeah, because it's a simple...
No.
Very,
very.
I'm not saying no. You're misreading. It is a simple.
Don't use that word.
It's a simple, elemental sport. Two human beings engaged in physical, struggle, combat, with no weapons, other than what they possess and
the
techniques.
I'm aware of the format of the sport.
They possess. Yeah. Well, I don't know that our listeners fully appreciate.
This is ridiculous. But
why?
Because you have too much of an advantage from height. And any sport that gives you an advantage because of your body size, to me, is a tainted sport.
Hmm.
That's all. Wrestling has no such advantage. No other sport really has that much of an advantage.
The bigger you are in football, the easier.
Not necessarily height, though.
Not necessarily
short
height,
people
but it does help.
Well, it makes a big difference.
Height is usually an advantage in almost
anything. Correct, but not to this extent.
Well, it's because they put a basket at a designated height, and it stayed there ever since.
Should they move it? I think they should move it.
Then
make it 12 feet.
But then you're rewarding height even more.
I don't know about that.
I think you are.
Really? I don't know about that.
Because, well, here's why. You move the basket up.
Yeah.
It's harder to shoot from range. Hence, more rebounds are needed. Hence, height comes even more into play.
All right. I don't know. Well, you should know, but more.
I have always thought... one of the ways to sort of solve the big man issue in basketball is to do the reverse.
Lower the basket? Okay. I don't know.
Look, if the goal is to negate a height advantage, the lower something is, the less advantage the taller person has in getting there. All you need to do is block them from it, hence blocking out. And basketball was created as a physical sport.
All right.
Well, you know, it was done so. But also, partly, look at why it was created. It was created because they needed an activity that could be done during the winter to keep people in shape, to keep men active.
Right, for people who didn't have enough testosterone to wrestle.
No, you could wrestle if you wanted. Wrestling
not and play basketball.
Why not?
Because you're not a man if you play basketball. You have to be a man to wrestle.
I think it had a huge impact because, A, from 1891, it catches on quickly.
For people that weren't man enough to wrestle,
50 years later, an established pro league is formed in the United States.
I'm just kidding. It's everybody. It's subjective.
Yeah.
My sport is wrestling.
I do think one of the great things they could do in basketball is, for instance, you have made many mentions about height.
Just one.
No, throughout the years, you've made mentions about height.
Well, being short,
But you're not short. You're an average male. There's nothing wrong.
I resent that.
You're an average male height guy.
Oh, okay.
No, and intelligence, I'll say you're well above the curve.
Hey, take it easy.
You're probably the curve buster. Okay. But look, if you want to, I always thought it'd be fun. Lower the rim to 8.5
feet. Weren't they talking about having like a below 6 feet league or something?
And,
did they ever have that?
Like, here's what I always wanted to do. I was lucky enough to grow up in a gym where the baskets could be mechanically lowered.
Yeah.
All you had to do was press a button.
Right.
And they would come down to 8, 8.5, whatever you liked.
Right.
So for fun, because the coaches hated it, but for fun, down come the baskets to 8. We're all under 6 foot as a bunch of middle schoolers and early high schoolers. And you know what happens to the game as soon as those baskets come down?
What happens?
Everybody wants to dunk it.
Oh.
Everybody wants to dunk it. It becomes a game of who can get to the rim the quickest, and it becomes really dangerous.
Should have played dodgeball.
Right. We did.
That's more fun.
We did. We, yeah.
All right. I think we've spent –
I think that I think the cultural
event.
First of all, excuse me, it's easy to play. All you have to do is be able to catch a basketball and pass a basketball.
Can't do it.
You don't even have to really dribble. You really don't, Armand.
I can dribble.
Well, I mean, from your lip, but
yeah, that's what I'm saying. All right, let's get to something a little bit more groundbreaking.
All right.
1937. I hope you've got this one.
I have it now. Okay. I want to ask you a question right off the bat. Is this just hyperbole, or was this truly Adolf Hitler's favorite film?
That's what I've heard.
Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs was released on this date, December 21st, and it premiered at the Cathay Circle Theater. So again, right before Christmas, big movie. And in the book Walt Disney by Neil Garber that we've mentioned before, you go to audible.com, look for this book, Walt Disney, the author, Neil Garber. A substantial portion of this book is dedicated to the creation of Snow White, and it is a fascinating section of the book in the terms of how this movie was put together.
Now, who is Adriana Caselotti?
I do not know.
That is the voice
of Snow White.
Now, just to show you what kind of guy Disney was. First, he pays her $20 a day, which amounted to about $970 for this part.
Okay.
Then he makes her sign a contract that she cannot use her voice. His voice is his. So this poor gal cannot use her voice on any other medium. Jack Benny wanted her on his radio show. Nope. Sorry. Can't do it. I think he did let her for something to do a couple lines on Wizard of Oz.
Walt.
Yeah. But forever, this woman had one movie because of this, because she signed that contract.
Well, then she had a bad agent.
That's how we do it. And
she had a bad agent. Come on. She should have been getting royalties for this forever.
Everybody thought it would be a flop, you know, so that he would never enforce this. Because it was called Disney's Folly. Everybody thought it would be hell of a flop.
They did. But, I mean, in terms of what went into the production of this.
A lot.
Let alone the drawing of cell by cell, right?
Yeah.
But the inking as well. And the team that was needed to do this. And the fact that, you know, this is not like another movie where you can
film full length animated movie.
Yeah, but you know, you go and you film All Quiet on the Western Front. You then edit it together.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, it's completely superfluous to do that in animation. you got to know what you're doing and how you're going to do it. Otherwise, you're wasting your time.
I storyboard it all and
the
everything.
Storyboard is absolutely critical.
Now, this was also the at the time. Now, it still is, I think, adjusted for inflation, the all-time animated leader as far as money made.
I think anything from the late 30s, whether it be Gone with the Wind.
Well, that's what I was just about to say. This was actually the all-time leader.
Until?
For 1 year. Exactly 1 year, apparently. When Gone with the Wind took over, because it was the top grocer of the 30s until Gone with the Wind.
But it was an instant sensation, though. Again, 1937. Now, I'm not saying that there's not color. There are a handful.
Sure, there's Technicolor.
There's a handful.
They make a few films every year. That wasn't it.
But your world in terms of walking into a movie theater is black and white. It had to be astounding to go into a theater, sit down, and watch the explosion of not just animation, which had been around.
Yeah, and so color. Well, color too, but that's what
it had to be. Just
it was just a great film. That's all. Well, I don't know. Technical aside, it was a great story. It was well done. The songs are really nice. You know,
it had everything.
Yeah, in fact, and it was scary too. You know, in fact,
it had all the elements of a great picture you'd ever want.
It ran at Radio City Music Hall for I don't know how long,
months.
They had to when it left. They had to replace every velvet seat. Because the little kiddies...
They pee in the seats.
Yeah, they peed, and that was too bad.
You know, the Beatles went through that, too.
Oh, did they?
They had to have guys come mop the aisles because the girls would get so excited, they just...
Yeah, I have that effect on...
No, really, do you?
More like vomit.
Oh, well, they'd still need a mop, so...
Yeah, that's
and sawdust. But, so the cultural impact...
And let me ask you, and this gal, this Casalotti, we're talking about Adriana Casalotti, a couple other things about her. Her mother, apparently, was my favorite Sopranos first voice coach... Maria Callas.
Yeah, Maria Callas. You do love her.
Her first voice coach. I didn't know that.
Wow.
And she claims to be the first woman to wear a bikini in public.
Now, how do we know that?
I don't know.
And first of all, how do we know some Roman lady didn't wear some bikini equivalent?
Well, a bikini is defined not by, there's an actual definition of what a bikini is. So
I guess, bra and panties that you match and you wear to the beach.
More than that, I think.
I'll still never
Ole
understand
Cassini would probably
why
take
women today
issue with that facile description. There's much more.
Answer me
that.
This question. Why can women today go to the public pool in less square inches of clothing in a bikini, but you cannot see them in their underwear, which might be twice the amount of square inches of material?
Well, that's controversial. I mean, they want most women, a lot of women want to have, isn't that day, the topless day or whatever? Or they want to be able to.
I think we're all for that.
Oh, I'm for it.
But in Rome, I don't think it mattered. When you went to the baths, it was sans anything, right?
I would think. I don't know. I wasn't there.
You wish you were. Yeah. Now the cultural, but the cultural impact of animated films, though, because now, really,
well, Disney,
really for the first time, though, culturally speaking, it wasn't like Snow White and the Seven. You know, we think of these as children's movies.
No,
but truly, an adult can go and enjoy these movies, and now taking your family to the theater, movie theater, is a real option as a form of entertainment. Where before, I don't know if you're taking the kids to see a Mutiny on the Bounty, maybe a film like Tarzan.
Yeah, but the thing was, at that time, you had the Hays office and everything, so you could take them without, they weren't meant for children.
Right.
But you could take your children without having fear of, seeing this smut and filth.
I understand that point, but would you?
There were movies designed for children.
I know they are, but they aren't spectacular Technicolor animated productions.
I know, but I don't call it that. You're making it out like an epic. I mean, there was the craftsmanship and the time and the meticulous attention to detail were admirable, but I don't think any of those were really that groundbreaking, except its length. That's all.
That they went so long with it as and what defined
technically done.
What defined a full length feature? Did it have to be 90 minutes or did it have to be six reels? Six reels, okay.
Yeah, which would probably be 60 minutes, maybe a little bit more.
All right, I want another one that I wanted to explore.
Since we're on the movies, I've got a couple too. Unless you want to do births first.
Yeah, you do. Right, it is time for births. We're halfway through the program. I got a good one for you right off the bat. English priest. Also a hunter, also a dog breeder, born on this date, December 21st, 1795. Who would that be?
Well, I see it right in front of me, so I'm cheating, but I didn't know it was his birthday.
Jack Russell.
Yeah, I've heard of the Terrier.
And I hate those dogs.
Okay.
I really do. I don't know that I should even be celebrating this guy's birth.
Okay.
But that is one yippy little dog. That's a. But you know what they're you know what they're good for? They're ratters. You got rats on a ship. You want a terrier?
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because they go and get them.
Makes sense.
They will. Yeah, they'll sniff them out. 1804. Here's one for you, yeah. Armand, the English lawyer and politician. He would be the prime minister of the UK. Benjamin Disraeli is born.
First Jewish prime minister.
Yeah. You a fan of Disraeli?
No.
You a fan of Disraeli's Gears, the album?
I like Gladstone.
Okay. 1892, the American golfer Walter Hagen is born. And in 1911, the American baseball player, Negro League.
Right, Josh,
great.
Right.
How good he was, we may never know.
It's too bad.
Josh Gibson is born on this date in 1911. 1918, I mentioned this because he's a colonel, he's a politician, he was a White House chief of staff, and he had one of the most unfortunate close names ever. Donald Regan.
It's easy to remember.
Who are you? I'm Donald Regan. Oh,
trivia fans.
No, it's no not him. It's yeah. Regan, and it's not Ronald.
He's not the Gipper.
It's Reagan. Now the next one, I've always
another
been
controversial character.
I've always been mystified by this one: a colonel, a politician, the ninth president of Austria, and a war criminal.
And
Kurt Waldheim.
Right, and Secretary General of the UN. How can you leave that out? Even though it's completely figurehead, and who cares? But that's kind of a big deal. That was his problem, right? When they didn't want to make him Secretary General because he apparently visited a Nazi, and Reagan went with him, I think. I remember all that kind of controversy.
I remember that. We had controversy.
Visited, but they didn't. I don't think they even knew, or at least Reagan didn't know there were Nazis buried there. They were just going to pay their respects to war veterans.
He laid the wreath, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then he caught all hell for it.
Yeah.
After,
you just can't win.
Okay,
now this guy.
This guy couldn't win either, although he did some winning.
All right.
1926, born on the 21st of December, Joe Paterno.
Joey Pa.
Joe Pa, the football player and coach.
Yeah, the man's whole reputation, life has been sullied by our old friend Jerry Sandusky, who I think, is he still in stir? I don't know, what's his deal?
Yeah,
although he wants his pension. Yeah, he wants his money.
Good luck.
I know that.
Yeah, he's wearing the orange
Paterno
suit.
Knew?
Do I think he knew? It's best explained to me like this. He was an older guy from an older school and an older way of thinking. And when he's told something, it matters how it was told to him. If he's told there's horseplay in the locker room, to Joe, that means one thing. If I hear there's horseplay in the locker room, I now stop and think I need to look into this.
Yeah, I don't know. I think he kind
That's how it was explained to me.
I don't think he took the proper measures.
I don't think he took the proper measures either, but it's a classic, what did he know and when did he know it? And there's no way to answer that.
Guilt by association.
Yeah, I will say, though, I am always wary of guys who hold themselves up to be beyond repute. Okay. My mother loved this guy.
Well,
and as
Penn
a kid,
State people all do.
I know. And as a kid, I was always like, something doesn't smell right here. I don't know what it is, but any man who wears black shoes and white socks on purpose, and high water pants,
hey,
to show that he's the common man, that's trying a little too hard.
Okay,
I you know what I would I was I'll be honest I was never a fan.
I'm not a big Penn State fan.
No. Penn State's fine. That's a great university. That is one of the great public institutions in America. And what I am a fan of Paterno's is the things that he did in getting facilities non-athletic going and built at Penn State.
All right.
Now he was central in there, but he is the perfect embodiment. Let's throw the sexual scandal out for a bit with Sandusky. And remember,
it's hard to do
Joe Paterno never touched anyone, nor was accused of this. However, he was an embodiment of athletic departments at our public universities riding roughshod over the rest of the university.
Well, that's going to be forever.
It is now, and it has been for quite some time once football got really established as a revenue-generating sport. But they've dealt with this, Armand, for 100-plus years.
Well, listen, since you've started this, I'm going to give my opinion. I don't even think we need colleges anymore. Does it ever occur to you that everything
do
else—
we need colleges or college sports? What do you mean?
Colleges.
Okay.
Because, and here's how I say that. Because I've been listening to some MIT lectures on differential equations.
Uh-huh.
And when I took it in college, I didn't understand. I mean, I passed the test just because out of sheer, I guess, tenacity.
Okay.
But I still didn't understand what the hell was going on. I watched these lectures from these guys that really know what the hell they're doing as far as lecturing on the internet.
Yeah.
And I learned more on that. What do we need this outdated brick and mortar college system for anyway?
Well, I know you're not advocating. I know you're not advocating online universities because those
are great.
No, some of them. One of them just paid a $25 million fine.
I get it, but okay, then regulate them. Okay, the government regulates everything else. You can't regulate those. That's easy.
Well, you're not Mr. Regulation.
Well, no, but I'm just saying if that's a problem, that you can be regulated.
Look,
but you don't need a whole agency to do it. If you took away all the other crap from colleges, which the inflation of the college because of what you're saying, dormitories, sports, because now the college very little of the money that goes from your tuition goes to actually hiring and keeping professors. It goes to this other crap, student unions, things they can sell the students on, dormitories. Posh surroundings, the football team, etc. So very little of this actually goes to education.
Well, the football teams
don't need them.
Generally, they're separate business entities from the university. The athletic
generators.
No, the athletic departments are actually separate business entities.
Well, sure, they're incorporated sometimes. I don't know what the deal is, but that's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying that very little of your money actually goes to furthering education. It's getting worse and worse. I mean, there's seniors at Harvard can't find Canada on a map, you know, things like that. And that's a problem. I think you do away with all that stuff. You've got the internet.
Look, your ability to self-educate today, if you are self-motivated, is astounding.
Of course. That's what I'm saying. And you don't necessarily have to self-educate, though.
Not only do you have a library that's online that you can resource anything ever written, or you can teach yourself another language.
Anything
you can, or you can teach yourself differential equations. But still, the idea of people coming together and being able to be in the same locale and bounce ideas and questions off each other has value. Now, your proposition
nominal
is
nominal value.
Your proposition
I'll do that at graduate school,
is does it have the value that the cost of your average education now cost is a different one. But
three or four times the rate of inflation.
Yeah,
costs are spiraling, and that's what I'm saying.
Trust me, I have
like
a daughter
at
UCLA.
Right,
it's expensive.
You can afford it, but for an inner city kid,
they simply can't.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
They have
some other way to educate these kids.
They don't have access to it. They just don't.
And they do actually. They have access. You have the internet. You can set up something where they all go, and you know, I'm not a big advocate of even high school or public school. You know, I'm against that. In general, because that has nothing to do with anyway. We'll go to that someday, but we don't need these colleges. That's my opinion.
Okay.
And then you can get rid of all this horseplay in the shower.
Let me get back to the birthdays. That's where we were.
Okay.
Good grief. I hate. I mentioned this one. We might have to have a two-part show. Born on this date, 1937, December 21st, Jane Fonda. Also born on this. What was that? Oh, okay.
That's
also born on this date, 1940, Frank Zappa.
Oh, he's all right.
And unfortunately, he passed. Yeah, boy, he passed away way too young.
Don't eat the yellow snow.
But can you name his two kids?
I met one. I met Dweezil.
You met Dweezil.
Yeah,
I love
playing
Dweezil.
Drums over at the landing and Moon Unit.
Moon
right?
Unit. Yep. Okay. Born in 1948, Samuel L. Jackson.
Good actor.
Does he have the best agent ever? He is in every major franchise.
He does pretty well.
Other than like Harry Potter.
Yeah, he's doing all right.
I mean, he's in Star Wars. He's in The Avengers.
Yeah.
If there's a Quentin Tarantino film, he's probably got a shot.
Yeah, he's good.
1948, Dave Kingman, American ball player.
Now, I think he was drafted in four sports, wasn't he?
He was a very good athlete. He does not get the proper credit he deserves.
I know
deserves.
He's drafted for the NBA, NFL, and baseball.
He was
not drafted in hockey.
I can unequivocally.
Wasn't he the one that hit the bird and killed it? Remember that?
Well, there's been several.
But he like batted a ball and killed the bird.
There's a throwing ball in Toronto as well that knocked down a seagull.
I thought he hit it with
he got one in Chicago.
Oh, maybe that's what I'm thinking. Did he hit the thing in? Here's what happened. He hit the damn Astrodome. They didn't know what to do.
When
he hit the ceiling of
the
Astrodome.
There was no ground rule for it.
Right, exactly. I think they called it a ground rule double.
Yeah.
Nobody ever done it before.
No one had ever done it. Now, he hit a lot of home runs.
Oh, yeah. He struck out a lot, too.
Right. But boy, when he hit him, did they go.
That's why people wanted to see him.
And he was pre-steroid era.
Yeah.
So I mean, I'm assuming
his lifetime batting could have
probably
been more
220.
Like 230. Yeah, yeah, not much.
Also boy, born was, on this date, one tough Dominican, Joaquin Andujar. Now, you have to know your baseball to know that Joaquin Andujar, St. Louis Cardinals, Houston Astros, I believe Oakland Athletics as well.
He kind of tainted himself to that Game 7. He kind of made a fool of
himself. In 1985, he did, but he also pitched the Cardinals to a World Series in 1982. 1957, born December 21st, Ray Romano. I like Ray.
He's a funny guy. I like
1960 of Seinfeld fame, Roger McDowell. Oh, by the way, he pitched for the New York Mets. And in 1967, 21st of December, happy birthday, Magic Johnson.
Man, I thought he was older than that. Okay.
American basketball player.
Give the first.
No, this is, that can't be question. That can't be correct.
67?
Yeah, that cannot be correct. Scratch that, folks.
Because he played against Bird in 82. Yeah, he was,
no, 79. He wasn't 12.
Well, that's right, 79. He played Michigan State against Indiana, right?
He wasn't 12 years old.
Yeah, so that's got to be wrong.
I'm sure there's another Irvin Johnson, but.
Oh, okay. All right. That's not
to the other Irvin, non-Magic, to non-Magic, happy birthday. All right, back to it, Armand. What else do you have for me?
All right, I got a couple. All right, since we're discussing films and seminal films.
Seminal films.
Groundbreaking, influential films.
Here you go.
1914, the first full-length comedy. And by that, I mean six reels of pure joy.
And as a silent film?
Yes, 1914.
Wow.
I'm going to give you some hints. Charlie Chaplin.
Great train ride.
Norma Desmond. No, not more Norma. Marie Dressler. Mabel Normand.
Gold Rush. No, that's later.
Tilly's Punctured Romance.
I wouldn't have gotten that in a million years.
Yep, first.
Tilly's Punctured Romance.
Yeah, and the
you?
Last film that Chaplin ever did that he was directed by someone else besides himself. Max, that is someone being Max Sennett. Keystone Cops were in it.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty good stuff. Funny.
You like the silent stuff.
Sure, I love them.
Okay.
I love them.
All right.
Tilly's Punctured Romance.
How big is Apollo 8 to you in terms of...
I don't think it's that big of a deal. I think Apollo 11 obviously overshadows it. It was at the time, it was quite revolutionary, I guess. But I don't think they really initiated it. Getting to the moon and getting off the damn thing was a lot tougher than orbiting it, you know.
Yeah, certainly.
In my opinion.
Certainly. No, but the fact that everything worked.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that
it laid the groundwork for
to think that future. You know, the cell phone you have in your pocket, it's got more computing power.
Oh, God. Much more.
And they got to the moon and back, even if they didn't touch it.
Yeah, with slide rules and...
I mean, and if you ever go into Mission Control in Houston and look at the consoles that those men used...
How'd they do it?
How'd they do it is...
Maybe they didn't.
No, they did.
Okay.
They did.
Well, I'm glad we put that to bed.
Yeah, they did.
All right.
All right.
1949, I got another film, as long as we're on these movies.
Mm-hmm.
Samson and Delilah premieres.
Oh, one of
my favorites.
You're starting to get into the big...
Well, now that was a...
Panavision epic type
film,
right?
No, not quite yet. No, not until 1953 when you got The Robe, which was the first CinemaScope. We'll get to that one whenever it's that day.
All right.
Samson and Delilah was the usual, the standard, I think, 1.37:1 ratio. Cecil B. DeMille.
When did the screen widen?
That's what I'm saying.
Out.
CinemaScope. 1953.
Okay.
The Robe.
Okay.
Yeah. This was made in the traditional, conventional format. Cecil B. DeMille, highest grossing movie of the 40s, made like $11 million, more than double the next, the highest grosser for 1949. Victor Mature, actually, Cecil B. DeMille, who was actually supposed to be Samson, was Burt Lancaster.
No kidding.
Yeah. You know why he didn't get it?
From Here to Eternity.
No, they said he had a bad back, but it wasn't that. It was his politics. Burt was very liberal. Cecil B.
He was not very liberal.
So that was his. They're not going to work well together. So that's what cost Burt Lancaster. So they gave it to Victor Mature, who was one of us, a good guy, conservative, and So anyway, he's got to wrestle this live lion. Vic didn't like that too much.
And I don't think I would either.
He tried to tell me, the lion has no teeth. He said, well, listen, I'm not going to get gummed to death either. So he just didn't do it. So if you watch the movie, you can tell the guy wrestling him is not Victor Mature.
Yeah, I'll give him a break
but
on that.
Angela Lansbury's still around.
She is.
Yeah,
she's not too happy either. Have you heard this?
No, what's the matter with
her? She's not very happy about the live-action Beauty and the Beast. Didn't deem it necessary.
Apparently they're doing a live action Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs too.
Yeah, but the Beauty and the Beast, you know, it's a I say live action, but it, you know, it's a non-animated Beauty and the Beast.
Okay.
Just redoing the animated version that Disney did.
I think that's superfluous too.
Well, so does Angela.
Way to go, Angela. Yeah. And another.
You're probably of the age you watch a lot of Murder, She Wrote.
I've seen. Well, I watched it on TV. Yeah. Steve Reeves was also. DeMille wanted him. But he apparently
Steve or George?
No, Steve Reeves.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean the real guy.
The bigger
George was Superman, but he's kind of a pussy. But George Reeves, Steve Reeves he was the real deal. That guy.
I know. Okay.
Anyway, he's Mr. America and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Well, they kind of want him to tone it down a little bit. They thought he was too big.
Oh.
And he said, "The hell with that."
No. This is my gig. Okay.
Yeah. He wanted him to lose some weight, and he wouldn't do it. So, anything else about that? That was about the big one.
All right. Let's look at who died. Got some.
Oh, okay. Oh no.
You got one more?
Well, I got a couple. I think you would like this one. 1959. This man takes over as the coach of the Dallas Cowboys. Oh, come on.
Well, it's not Tom Landry.
It is Tom Landry.
Oh, it is. He was the first coach.
Tom Landry.
Now, Tom Landry and Vince Lombardi were both assistant coaches with the New York Giants.
Right.
And the New York Giant coaching tree that broke off.
Yes.
One goes to Green Bay. One goes to Dallas, and they both establish real institutions that today, to this day, the Packers and the Cowboys are national brands.
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought up Lombardi because in 1969, he coached his last game.
For the Washington Redskins.
Absolutely. I was going to ask you that. I knew you'd know that.
Yes.
First season that Tom Landry had, though, had a sterling 0-11-1 record.
Yeah, they had a tie.
They got
good very quickly, though.
Oh, yeah.
They did.
Did you know he flew 30 missions in a B-17?
Yeah, he is a true, let me tell you, Tom Landry, you want to look up American icons. Man, he's just one of these guys. Everything he did was just
stoic look, the fedora.
Let me tell you, that.
The suit.
The NFL Films picture where he is in silhouette in the tunnel.
Ah, yeah.
And you can't even.
Famous shot.
And it's just silhouette in profile with the fedora.
Yeah,
is one of the greatest iconic shots of an American coach that I think's ever been taken.
20 straight winning seasons.
Oh, it was remarkable. A
couple of Super Bowls.
It was remarkable.
He was in five during the 70s, one, two. He's only behind two other coaches in wins. He's got 250.
Yeah.
Who were the other two ahead of him?
I don't know.
Don Shula, of course.
Oh, yeah, Don. Yeah,
George Halas.
George. Well, that's because George coached forever.
Yeah. But Don Shula is my favorite coach because I'm a Dolphins fan.
He's a good one. He was a good one.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, he still is. He's still around.
I love his steakhouse. Ooh, do I love his steakhouse. It's a pricey steak, Armand. I know you'd have a trouble with laying down $59
not if you take
for
me.
A filet mignon, but I'm going to tell you,
not if you're
it's worth every dollar, every bite. Because you take a bite and you're like,
every centavo.
That's just, I just had about $4.50 right there.
Wow.
And it's worth it.
Every fennig.
Oh, man. I've had some good steaks in my day, but if you ever get a chance to go to Shula's, it's in Miami Gardens. There's also one in Indianapolis.
I lived in Miami.
And I don't know if there's one in Baltimore or not.
Okay.
But the places where his teams are, the Colts and the Dolphins, it is superb.
Yep.
And all the trimmings that come with the steak are also superb. But if you're going to go, you better bring the cash or the gold card. Because a dinner for four is going to set you back about five.
Ooh.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, especially if you have a cocktail.
I'll take your word for it.
Yeah, it is. But it's worth it. Oh, man, is it good. All right.
Now we can get to the desk.
Who died? Who died as we wrap things up on this day in history?
I
have a couple that I want to go past.
Okay.
72 is the year. Thomas the Apostle, the martyr and the saint.
Is that Doubting Thomas? I assume that's who that is?
It's the Apostle. Well, yes.
All right. Okay.
You ever hear the joke about Thomas? Jesus comes back.
Yeah.
He's, you know, how are you going to get around Israel and Palestine? You're going to have to use a, you know, remember the what would Jesus drive sort of thing?
Oh, yeah.
That the your friends, the environmentalists, were on? My answer was, well, obviously he'd have two big SUVs. He's got 12 guys. He's got to get them all around. You ever been to Israel? It's rocky. It's terrainy. You can't get around Galilee and any old thing.
I guess not.
You need a big Land Rover. You need a Defender. You need a Ford Bronco Expedition, something.
Damn right. Emit some CO2.
He gets two of those, rolls up. Thomas goes, what are you doing? He goes, I got to get you guys around. Don't worry. Thing gets 38 miles to the gallon. Thomas says,
I doubt it.
There you go.
18 joke.
Yeah, you got to go a long way for that one. 1824, James Parkinson, the physician and the paleontologist, he passes away.
I assume Parkinson's.
You assume correctly.
Syndrome, Parkinson's disease.
Syndrome.
Or disease.
Which, by the way, what Muhammad Ali had.
Yeah, Catherine Hepburn.
Was Parkinson's syndrome. I
probably, you know, dementia pugilistica.
Purely just bizarre twist of fate. My cousin's foreign exchange student that lived with her for a year, her father was Ali's doctor.
Oh, wow.
And he was Serbian by way of Sweden. And in the 80s, if you needed treatment, you often went Scandinavian because they had advanced things that the FDA here had not yet approved.
Yeah,
so if you had to throw a Hail Mary,
so, yes,
you threw it over there.
So if you have to solve that problem, of course, what do you do? Abolish the FDA, please.
1937, Frank B. Kellogg. Passes away.
Here's a great guy. Frank, you want to win a Nobel Prize for doing nothing.
Nobel laureate, my note to myself on the sheet is, ask Armand why this guy is a Nobel laureate.
Oh, you don't know? Oh, I got to tell you this story. 1926, I think, which is the year he won, the Kellogg-Briand Pact. You've heard of this?
Yes.
Okay, this is really great. They outlawed war.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's how you do it. That's how you, and that's how you win Nobel Prize.
Can we outlaw war?
Just outlaw it.
Armand and I are going to issue a decree, a pact, maybe a papal bull even.
The Huber-Kachigian pact. Yeah,
I like the ring of that.
Yeah, wait a minute.
The French-Armenian thing.
Anyway, Kellogg-Briand pact. We'll go over that sometime. Just outlawed war.
Yeah.
You know, that's
it
out, you guys.
There's no fighting on the playground anymore, kids.
And you win for that.
Yeah.
You win.
1940, on this date, the 21st of December, F. Scott Fitzgerald.
Yeah, Francis Scott Fitzgerald.
And
his wife is the one I like.
Do you
Zelda?
Really?
Oh, yeah. What a nutcase she was.
She was fun.
No, a couple of boozers. They had a good time.
She was fun.
I don't think I could live with her.
Favorite Fitzgerald work? Are you Gatsby, or do you have something else?
I like the short stories.
You like the short stories?
Get the short stories of F. Scott Fitzgerald.
I have.
I'm sure Audible's got them. I'm sure.
They do. Amazon.com has them. Go to our website.
Only has one screenwriting credit.
And I knew this, and now I'm blanking. Because he did not do the William Faulkner, John Steinbeck deal.
Well, he went to, you know.
He did, but he
they
didn't.
They hired him, but he never quite got the. He's writing these beautiful, long prose.
Right.
Like he's writing a novel. Yeah. He never quite grasped
screenplay.
So the only credit he had was Three Comrades. With our old friend, French Atone, who got the shit beat out of him. We've discussed this. Robert Taylor and Robert Young, Marcus Welby.
There you go.
The Three Comrades.
So you're the short story guy.
And Margaret Sullivan, who killed herself.
Yeah.
That's a tragic story.
1945, and this one is not without controversy and conspiracy. And our friends, I'm going to give this to Eric and Everett Hicks, our friends at Surreal Talk here at lineupmedia.fm.
Yeah, we should do a show on this.
And this might be a combo show, but the death of George S. Patton, the 21st of December, 1945 and I will say, while not a conspiracy guy, I usually am like, simple answer is the most obvious.
Occam's
razor. I've watched things on this. I've read things on this.
What did you read? What is there a book that we
not can, a book?
Okay,
just and I have not read it, but it's Bill O'Reilly's Killing Patton.
Oh, okay.
All right, and that's available at audible.com. Which you can get a free, if you want to make that a free audio trial for yourself, you might want to choose that. Just go to audibletrial.com/thisdayinhistorypodcast. Get signed up. Get yourself a free audiobook download. You can make it Killing Patton.
Did you see the movie?
No.
Brass Target.
No.
Yeah.
No. I will say, though, and I do want to do this with our friends at Surreal Talk, something happened there. This is not a routine street accident.
Well,
something happened
because of the artwork and all that was being stolen. Was the premise of Brass Target, that these people were, that there was a lot of theft going on of all this stuff that the Nazis stole. This artwork and looted.
I don't know.
Our guys were taking it,
yeah.
And that Patton was found out about it, and he'd had enough.
I think a lot of people had incentive to kill him.
Oh sure. Well, you know what he
on both sides.
Said? A Democrat is the lowest form of human
for
life.
For God's sake!
And a liberal Democrat is the lowest form of Democrat. I'm just quoting him. That's all. I didn't say I agree with it.
Are you of the mind that that Patton was
gay?
No.
I don't think he's gay.
No, rubbed out.
Oh. Ooh, you know, it's quite a coincidence.
It's too much.
To read. Did you read that book?
I have not.
Riley O'Reilly's book. I don't know.
I have not. I have not read it yet, but I think I'm very intrigued by this one.
Yeah.
Because I,
well,
again.
What did you think about him as a man?
I understand it was a war, but slapping a soldier, no.
Well, apparently he and he was mistaken. He thought the guy was the guy apparently had legitimate wounds.
He did.
And he wasn't.
And George did also not understand.
There were more than one, actually.
He also did not understand what was happening with traumatic stress. Or did not care. One or the other.
Yeah, well, you know, they should have shot the yellow bastard, is I believe what he said. But read Ladislaus Farrago's patent book, the one that the film is based on.
Where George C. Scott, that film, the 70 film.
Yeah, no. The guy's name is Ladislaus Farrago. That's a great book on Patton.
And that's just Patton. I'll go to Amazon and look that up.
Yeah,
absolutely.
That's the one you want to read, I think.
Yeah.
Still definitive. I'm just, as just a comment upon him as a general, I don't think he was quite the caliber of Rommel.
I don't know
I
that.
I think he's better than Montgomery, who is
I
not,
think we can
not
all
the
agree.
Caliber of me.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean,
but, look,
Montgomery,
when,
I'm not
when
sure.
you say the caliber of Rommel, you,
yeah,
come
well,
on.
That's
you're
rarefied. Or that even you're von Rundstedt.
You're
know.
In rarefied air.
Yeah.
But, you, come on. There are guys at West Point, I'm sure, who teach on tactics of Rommel.
Probably still studied, but.
Yeah.
Then again, Patton, you know, I mean, the guy, he basically, his philosophy was always advance.
Yes.
And,
which
is credit for that. He did a lot of that. The Germans feared him more than any other general, apparently, at least the American and British.
Well, because it's a sort of a mirror, you know, because, again, Blitzkrieg is very effective until the moment you outrun your supply line. So when you have that coming back at you, you know, it's a challenge.
Yeah, well, Patton's problem was, I think, you know, this criticism isn't really a criticism. He didn't get along well with others.
No, he did not play ball.
So, like, I mean, when they had the Falaise Gap, which someday we'll go over that,
mm-hmm.
he really went after the British and the Canadians for not closing the, you know, because they had him dead to rights. Probably would have ended the war, at least in the West, real quick. And he moved very quickly. They didn't. And, you know, he went after Montgomery a lot for being too cautious, which, of course, he was.
Well, Montgomery clearly was the McClellan.
But he's a darling of the British, you know.
Okay,
so
fine. Monty,
yeah.
Whatever.
He was a
but he's clearly the
people.
McClellan of World War II. When are you going to do something?
Yeah, but I think his results were a little better than McClellan. He wasn't totally indolent. I don't get that. You know, his preparation, though, I mean, like El Alamein took like 6 months to get before he took off.
Yeah.
He just wanted to make sure that he didn't lose, which you can do.
Yeah, but
when you've got a 10-to-1 tank superiority,
you can. But you can,
and time is on your side.
As history will show you, also making sure that you don't lose often ensures that you do not win.
But during World War II, it would have been very hard to lose. You know,
with that kind of advantage, yeah, 10-to-1
air superiority,
right,
and
all
the advantages.
Yeah.
All right. Anyway, I've got
more for you.
Yeah, I've got
1992, Stella Adler.
Great actress, great teacher.
Well, I was going to ask you, as a teacher, how influential?
I was going to take her course, actually. She was dead, of course, but she still has a Stella Adler, her acting
now,
school.
Now, is this
Hollywood
purely
Avenue.
Method?
I think she's kind of modified Meisner or whatever. It's not purely method.
Okay.
She's a Meisner. Acolyte.
And I have one more for you. 1992, a great singer-songwriter, blues player, guitarist, producer, Albert King. He passed away.
Not familiar with
him. Albert King?
No.
Overshadowed by guys like B.B. King,
okay,
Bo Diddley. But if you come across an Albert King song, record, and if you like blues music, guitar playing, you will like it.
Okay. Well, I've got one for you that I think was a heinous disregard for a heinous omission. Unforgivable.
I like the word heinous.
Ted Healy.
Oh, I did cross him off.
Ted Healy, 1937. Okay.
I did.
Now, you know I'm a big
fan. I took
fan.
Him off my list.
Yeah, well, I'm taking you off my Christmas list. The hell with you, because Ted is the big one. In fact, if you want to talk about things that impact our lives, yes, today, my life,
I do. Okay.
Ted Healy and his Stooges. Okay, it's 1922, right? Ted Healy's on vaudeville, the highest paid performer on vaudeville.
No kidding.
$9,000 a week on vaudeville. Okay.
That's raking
doing his act. Yeah, doing his act. He needs an acrobat. Well, Mo Howard volunteers, but Mo's not an acrobat, unfortunately.
Yeah, but details.
So Ted makes him a stooge, which is, you know, one of those guys that heckles you in the audience. You bring him on stage smack him around.
Yeah.
So a couple years later, Shemp joins the act. And then in 1928, Larry Fine joins the act. So now we got Ted Healy and his Stooges.
Now, the audience knew they were plants in the audience,
yeah,
right?
Of course. Yeah.
Okay.
And they were very popular. They love that stuff.
All right.
They love that stuff.
Right.
So anyway, you got Ted Healy and Stooges. They're making some movies over at MGM.
Yeah.
Healy was a little tight with the dollar. Even making that kind of money, he kind of screwed him all the time.
Those films looked a little tight with the dollar.
So he, on a shoestring, of course. But anyway, Columbia, that was Harry Cohn. We'll go into him someday.
Yeah.
But so anyway, they break up, get back together. Anyway, break up for good. So it's December 21st, 1937, right? Ted Healy's wife. Ted Healy was a big, loved children. Very generous with children.
Like Harpo.
Yeah, I mean, to the nth degree. I mean, every Christmas he had like a party for like underprivileged kids, gave him thousands of dollars worth of toys.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the guy shelled out his money. He was a good guy, apparently.
Like the Little Lebowski Urban Achievers.
Oh, okay.
I'm proud of them. We all are.
Okay, I am. I don't know who they are, but they sound like very laudable organizations.
From the Big Lebowski.
Very laudable organization.
From the Big Lebowski, Armand.
Me no like. Okay. So, Gold Rush, if you want to see Tilly's Punctured Romance. So, anyway, Ted goes to the Trocadero to celebrate because his wife actually had a kid.
Wait a second. It's pronounced the Trocadero?
The Trocadero.
Uh-huh. It's not the Trocadero.
Trocadero, I believe.
Oh, wow. I stand corrected.
Having a few drinks, right? Just had a son. Everything's great, right?
Everything's roses.
Okay. Well, gets beat up by three, quote, college boys.
Uh-huh.
A couple days later, goes into convulsions, drops dead.
Pseudonym for hit guys.
Okay, now you're close, but the college boys, it turns out. one of them, Toughs? No, one of them was Pat DeCicci, I think is how you pronounce it.
He's one of Lucky's guys?
No, but you're close. He's Thelma Todd's ex-husband, who was probably, you know, we've gone over Thelma Todd mm-hmm. and her death.
Yep.
Okay, the other one was Cubby Broccoli of James Bond fame, Saltzman and Broccoli.
Albert? Is that Albert's
Albert
father?
Broccoli. No, that's
uncle.
Him. That's
Albert.
Him.
That's Albert.
That's Albert. Albert Broccoli, the Cubby Broccoli, 25 years before
Holy
Dr. No.
Shit.
And the third college boy is Wallace Beery, the number one star at MGM.
I always make fun that Armand is off riding a Wallace Beery
wrestling
picture.
So they beat the holy shit out of Ted Healy and kill him, literally.
God.
Okay, so now it's time for our boy, Mr. Mannix, Eddie Mannix, uh-huh. the fixer. And he goes to work
Who
on
was
this.
Married to Tony?
I don't remember, but that's the plot of Mulholland Drive, I believe, or what it was. The George Reeves movie?
Yeah.
Talking about George
Hollywood
Reeves,
Land.
That Mannix knocked him off for screwing around with his wife.
Right.
Okay, is that her name, Tony?
I want to say it's Tony.
We'll go into that someday, but that's who this is. So they start.
T-O-N-I.
All of a sudden, they send Wallace Beery off for a European trip with his family.
Sure.
Better get out of here.
Yeah.
Start paying off the
get
coroner.
Get on the lam, Wallace.
Yeah, it was a heart attack or alcoholism when the guy's face is a total, you know, he looks like he's...
Alcohol will make your face look like a pancake.
Black and blue and, your cheekbone and everything. So they cover it up and old Ted Healy...
And this happened at the Trocadero.
Yeah, right outside in the parking
lot. This is right on Sunset.
Basically, it happened in the parking lot because what happened was, I think it was, the argument was between Healy and Wallace Beery for
some
reason.
That's good
stuff, Armand. And Ted Healy says, hey, step outside. Wallace says, okay, well... Broccoli and DeCicco, or whatever his name was, they're waiting. Trip him up, beat the crap out of him before he even knew what hit him. He's lying there in a pool of his own blood.
Oh.
Somebody calls a cab for him, and they take him home, and the next day he dies.
There you have it.
Yeah. So that's
December 21st. What a day.
Yeah, that's my
favorite.
There's
some good stuff today. All right, folks, that'll do it for this edition of This Day in History. Thanks for joining us here on lineupmedia.fm. Follow us on Facebook at thisdayinhistorypodcast.com and invite anyone you know to like our page. And when you see our stuff on social media, please share it. We've seen a lot of downloads. We've only been doing this for about a month, and we really appreciate the support. When December the 22nd rolls around, we'll be here to talk about it on This Day in History, part of lineupmedia.fm.
This podcast was a presentation of lineupmedia.fm.